I'm from California, and I never knew my father growing up for a variety of reasons. My parents met at the University of California, and he was from another country, and when I was three, they divorced. They didn't have as much in common as they thought. But I was always told that I was closer to him than I was to my own mother. And I referred to him as my bio dad as I grew up. And I really told everybody I had no interest in knowing him. But somewhere around the time that I got married, 12 years ago, I didn't invite him to the wedding, but I invited him to our home because I figured now I don't really need him. So if I don't like him or he doesn't like me or something goes terribly wrong, I'm in a good place. So we started to get to know one another. It turned out he was a really smart professor who had been in this country most of his career. And we actually really liked each other, and it helped to explain why I looked different from the rest of my family. I looked, my mother's 5'2 with green eyes, and he's a very tall gentleman and a little bit darker skin. So he had walked all over Baltimore, and he was in his mid-80s. So we got to know each other over the years a little bit, and a couple years ago when I was separated from my husband, he called me and he said, I'm going to Afghanistan and I'm going to see 300 of your relatives in Kabul. I'm going to a wedding. And I think he was really surprised because he doesn't expect much from me at this point. I was pretty cool with him. And but I knew that this was a trip I needed to make. And certainly a man in his 80s going back for the first time in 40 years, I wanted to be there when he saw his country. So I asked if I could go, and I had 2 weeks to prepare. So I called the only Afghans I know and the Karzai family gave me some clothing. They told me, how do you act like a nice Muslim girl? How do you fit in? How do you blend? So I had 2 weeks to figure out how to blend. And, well, I was more nervous than usual. I like to skydive. I like to do exciting things. But I had apparently chosen the wrong airline between Dubai and Kabul over some of the tallest mountains in the world. This particular airline that I'd chosen, Mrs. Karzai told me, was famous for crashing. And I got it all figured out, and I headed to New York. I was going to save a little money on the airline ticket, and I went to the wrong airport and missed my flight. And I don't think I knew how nervous I was, but I the next day I headed out, and I was told that once I get to Kabul, I had traditionally called, actually, my dad. I'd called him Hazrat, and that was his first name. And he said to me, listen, you can do whatever you like here, but as a sign of respect, you have to call me Dr. N when we are in Kabul, or you have to call me Father. And Father wasn't really a choice for me. I didn't know him well enough. I didn't even know what I was going into. So he flew on a different flight, and I flew, and I got to Dubai, and then I was flying in this tiny little airplane that was only half full, and most of the people on this flight were I can honestly say I might have been the only vacationer headed for Kabul 2 years ago. So when I told people what I was doing, a lot of people thought I was making it up and that it was my cover story. And I'm sure a lot of people had cover stories. There was a man who looked like a Russian drug dealer, and there were a few people that looked like undercover military because they were really muscular and plain clothes. And there were a couple NGO-looking people. When we arrived, I remembered all the things that I was supposed to do. I'm supposed to cover my hair. When I get to the airport, you know, you're supposed to not be alone, and I had already arranged for people to meet me. And I wasn't to go outside of the main city of 3 million people. I was to stay out of the mountains. And so I kept in mind everything that I was supposed to do to fit in. And when I arrived, there was no one there to meet me. And I sat in the airport for, I think, an hour. And I'm just looking at everybody, and I'm realizing I'm by myself, and I'm thinking I'm standing out. So I called the journalist that I had connected with ahead of time, and I said, "Are you out there? Where are you?" And he said, "Things have changed. The conditions are changing. So if you walk outside of the building, go across the parking lot, and then on the other side of the metal fence, you'll see me. I'm waiting out there." And this was a really long walk that I made with all my stuff going out there. And as I'm walking out there, I saw Dr. N. And he traditionally dressed in regular clothes, but now that we were in his country, he looked like Osama bin Laden. I mean, he was tall, and he had long white robes, and he had a white hat, and I thought, I really don't know him. But he was smiling at me, and he was so excited to see me, and there was all these people that were now my family standing next to him, and there was the journalist going like this, and so I got into the journalist let me go, and I got into the car with Dr. N and the family, and I didn't think we'd all fit, and I'm looking at their faces, and I'm looking at the roads, and I'm looking at the city, and there's all this beautiful architecture that's kind of crumbling away, and there's no greenery, no grass. Some of the sidewalks had been burned away and kind of destroyed, and the hills, you could see there were some beautiful homes there, and the home that we were staying in was quite modern and beautiful. In the 60s, Kabul was a destination. And my family, as it turns out, were very well-educated folks. And so the people I stayed with welcomed me as family, and they were very, very excited. They had seen pictures of me all growing up. And I wasn't doing anything right. I knew that I was staring at people too long, asking too many questions. When my ankles were showing, they gave me leggings, and they sent, and the women were giving me clothes. In fact, the entire time I was there, people were giving me clothing and telling me what to do and helping to keep me safe, and that was the idea. What I didn't know was they were worried that I would get kidnapped. I went into the hills. I wound up leaving the city, and I went to this three-day wedding. I went to the beauty shop for 3 days in a row, and the women were with me in the beauty shop, and you have your hair done and your face done, and you have all these clothes, and we went to the wedding, and I was surrounded by 300 of my relatives, and I thought someone somewhere is going to express some anger about the fact that I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know the language. I've got a different look on my face than everybody else. And the women were supposed to, at a certain point on the first day, they were supposed to go in the back, take off their modern clothes and put on their traditional clothes and come out and do this dance. And there's lots of ceremony. And actually, the Afghan people, the Pashtuns, are a lot culturally similar to Indian people in many, many ways, and the clothing looks very Indian and very ornate, and the hair and the face anyway, so the girls had taken to me, and they were really interested in the fact that I felt that I could do anything. I had ridden a horse recently, and because it turned out Dr. N wanted me to do whatever I wanted to do, and he would just follow me wherever I wanted to go. So the wedding, I went in the back, and I put on the traditional clothes, and I came out, and I realized I was the only woman in traditional clothes from the bride's side, and they pushed me out there, and they said, "Dance, you're one of us, you are us." And I'm always prepared to dance, but I wasn't prepared to be out there by myself, but I did it. So there's video of me dancing at an Afghan wedding with all the girls laughing on the side. They didn't change into their traditional clothes. And very quickly, we did wind up going to a girls' school because Dr. N told me to go wherever I wanted, and I visited a girls' school, and they thought I had been invited because there was a big celebration, and the girls' soccer team, they were celebrating, and they were celebrating because they had won the national championship for soccer. And the girls were in shorts. They were behind a big wall, the school was, and they were posing for photos, and they were all around me, and I had my scarf over my head. I was blending, and so I have all these photos of me and the soccer girls. And I was really amused that Dr. N wanted me to do whatever I wanted to do. And when we got back to the house one day, I was never alone, by the way, ever, ever, ever. It's a luxury for Western women. But Dr. N wanted to talk to me, and I thought perhaps I was in trouble. I knew that I wasn't doing everything the right way. And he said to me, "I'm really scared that I love you more than you love me." Now, had he looked a little bit more like Woody Allen, I would have expected him to say something like that. And had this been a movie, I would have wrapped my arms around him and said, "I love you too, Daddy." But instead, I was without words. But he was okay with that. I didn't know what to say. I said, "I'm getting to know you." I was nervous, and that was okay. When we were on the plane going back to the United States, because he lives in Boston and has worked his whole career, the Environmental Protection Agency, I realized at that point that I had been calling him Father. I had been calling him Dad for the last half of the trip, and I didn't know it. So I found a family that I never expected.